Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Canadian PodCow from here in Ottawa. I'm Sarah Sash, along with Andrew Campbell, and the whole team is here at Dairy Farmers of Canada 2025 Annual Policy Conference.
It's been a great day here, Sarah, so far. We've had lots of information, which I always really do enjoy, like all the DFC meetings, but the Annual Policy Conference is really that one where you get to hear perspectives from literally all over the world to get some just insight on what's going well here in Canada, what we can do better, and what's happening in the rest of the world.
Yeah, it's a great mixture, trying to meet some people in the hallway, get to synthesize the info together. So yeah, always something you learn.
And in this podcast, we often talk about what's happening here, but today, happening in the world regarding the dairy industry in Europe, Sarah.
Europe is a big player in the dairy industry. Lots to talk about for sure, coming up right here on the Canadian PodCow.
Our guest today is a trained lawyer and attorney with degrees from University of Bayreuth and Bordeaux. He's been Secretary General of the European Dairy Association since 2013. And since June of 2020, he has also been Secretary General of the European Whey Processors Association. Alexander Anton, welcome to the Canadian PodCow.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Sarah.
First of all, European Dairy Association, can you tell us what it is?
Well, that is the voice of the European processing, milk processing companies in the political bubble in the European institution in Brussels, Belgium. So we represent 90% of all the milk processed in the European Union by cooperatives and private companies, small ones, world leaders. And we do basically what the dairy farmers of Canada do at political level.
So when we have farmers on, we ask them to tell us about their farms. I'm curious if you could tell us about what milk production looks like in Europe, since that's what you're representing.
I thought you wanted to know how my office looks like.
I would also enjoy that.
No, you would not. It's a mess. But I can tell you about my farm, but that is only sheep. I'm sorry. No milk. I do apologize for that. In Normandy, a very beautiful place in France. Milk production in the European Union is astonishingly really similar. There are so many similarities between the Canadian and the European lactosphere, as we call it. I mean, we are talking about the average size of a dairy farm in Canada. It's about 100, a little bit smaller than yours, Sarah, but still. In Europe, we claim it's about 40, but frankly, a normal family farm, and a very normal family dairy farm in Europe looks exactly the same than in Canada. You're talking about 80, 120, 150 cows. It is a family business, which is very important in most of the cases. That's a structure. And so it really looks pretty much the same, and the cows smell the same.
So in terms of milk production, we heard today actually here at the annual policy conference that production is gradually increasing, in part because of the growth in population. Is it a similar story in Europe? Are you seeing kind of an increase in production, or where does it fit compared to us?
I mean, we have quite a little bit of more milk than you have, but we are bigger, right? You have about around 10 million tons of raw milk production per year. We are at 150 million tons, but we have 440 million people. You have 40 million people. That's in relation. It's all very similar. And in Europe, for the last 3 years, we don't see an increase in milk production any longer. There are some spots in Europe where still the milk production is still vibrant and it's growing, like in Poland, for instance. But in the heavyweight of European milk production, France, Germany, for instance, we have plateaued, or in France, we regress even in terms of milk volumes in production.
So what are the consumer trends looking like? I know here I have some sense of what they're like. It's all about protein. People are talking about cottage cheese. There's different, you know, depending on the segment of the population. But what's happening in Europe in terms of what the trends are?
I mean, what we've seen recently is milk is back. Milk is back. So you have on social media, for instance, all of that were... let's face it, we've been bashed more than we found eloge on social media. In the meantime, I don't say it turned fully around, but in the meantime, we have a relevance of a pro-dairy social media accounts. So milk is back on that level. It's bouncing back, and that's great. Then in terms of consumer products, the fresh product portfolio is gaining a little bit of momentum again. Probiotic yogurt, as you said, Sarah, the innovation in dairy is incredible in the product. If you want to have a full flavored fat yogurt, you go for the Greek style. If you want to have a protein yogurt, you go for the skyr style. So there is an offer that is incredible, and that resonates now with an higher uptake from the consumer, in even in drinking milk, where we were kind of decreasing every year. That tendency seems for the time being to be stopped. People continue to drink milk, of course, and on the cheese front, there is still growth on the cheese front, right? That is linked also to consumer habits. Whenever you eat out of house or you have a ready-to-eat meal, where the industry has reduced the meat part, for instance, for cost reasons or for whatever reasons, but you want to keep the mouthfeel, you want to keep the taste, etc., then you can't help but adding cheese.
So it actually sounds, you know, there are some similarities then to Canada there. I guess what I'm interested in, and you kind of mentioned it, between by the time we go to both consumption and production, you mentioned like Poland is growing in production. Great news for them. France is kind of regressing or plateauing in other areas. Can you talk about that very unique trait that Europe has, in that there's so many different countries that may be pulling in different directions in terms of growing, regression, some consumers wanting different yogurts, some other countries wanting cheese? What's that dynamic like in trying to kind of fulfill that, both the production requirements with what consumer trends are across 440 million people?
That the beauty of Europe, unified in diversity, is the motto line of the European Union. And it would fit, by the way, for all I experienced, also to Canada, with all the regions you have, right? And our strengths in the dairy industry in the sense milk production and milk processing, is that we are always, we don't have to claim we are local, we are always regional. Raw milk doesn't like to travel a lot. So you have the processing side where the milk is produced, and that regionalization principle is something that allows then to adapt to the consumer preferences of the regions. And I will, of course, I'm European. Of course, our geographical indications are just the top of the iceberg of that regionalization. That is what people want. They want the milk product they are used to, they like, they love, and they come from the region. All the best. And then you have those innovative products that may come from another region, but they have their unique selling point in the innovation and the composition. It's new, it's fantastic. That is what makes the strengths of European dairy. And I feel in Canada, it's not very different, if I may.
No. Things new and fantastic always attract me at the grocery store, I gotta say. This is all very interesting. We're gonna take a short break and come back with Alexander Antom from the European Dairy Association.
As Canadian dairy farmers, we follow ProAction, Dairy Farmers of Canada's national quality assurance program with 6 modules. Modules like milk quality, that stands for high standards of milk production, or food safety, producing milk that meets 42 requirements, and animal care, that means caring for every cow. ProAction sets standards of excellence. That's what's behind the blue cow logo. Dairy Farmers of Canada.
We are back at the Canadian Podcast with Alexander Antom, Secretary General of the European Dairy Association. Alexander, we were talking before the break about market trends in Europe. Are there any dairy products in particular? I'm not sure you got right to. I mean, maybe first start with telling me about your personal preference in dairy products, and then tell me what the market's seeing in terms of what's standing out.
In Canada or in Europe?
Europe.
In Europe. Okay. I mean, my preference, I'm basically from Normandy. It's Camembert de Normandie. You can't beat it, and you can't beat it. It's unbeatable. And in terms, what do we have in terms of consumer trends right now? Frankly, if there would be one new consumer trend right now, that is really milk is back. Drinking milk is back. We never had that growth rate of so-called alternatives than you've seen in this part of the world. And they never have taken as much place on the supermarket shelves as they do in your part of the world. And that has really stopped. People want to have the original, they want the natural stuff, and they don't want something with water, starch, and emulsifiers. People have noticed the ingredient list of a drinking milk is non-existent. It's the allergen labeling that says it's milk in. That's a nonsense as such, but it says milk. That's it. That's the ingredient. And that's what people want. And if that milk comes from a dairy that is in your region or close by, you got it.
Well, it reminds me, I do love the memes that talk about, have you ever heard of this new trend called cow's milk? Like, won't it be so delicious if you try cow's milk? It does work. It is fun to see that come back, and hopefully we continue to see this trend here in Canada too. We've talked a lot about similarities between Europe and Canada. We have another similarity in that Donald Trump is now the president of the United States. And we have had challenges here in Canada in all the first few weeks. How does he impact you in Europe?
Well, you talk about similarities. For all I know, he never asked the European Union to become part of the United States of America so far.
You are in 52nd state, yeah.
And frankly, I think integrating into the United States, a country, a sovereign and free and blessed country with two national languages is already a challenge. But we have 23 official languages, so have fun in integrating that. But you're not the only one who are targeted by the America First trade policy. We are on the list too. So far, it didn't get further, but it can come any time. And so, yes, there are similarities, and we have lived that before. Until 2021, we had a period with specific tariffs, specifically on European dairy, as a retaliation measure. And that is difficult because you have established your markets. And frankly, the volumes of cheese that comes from the European Union to the United States, as much as to Canada, is not, is not a chunk that would have an significant impact on the market. It is just, if you want to have a Parmigiano Reggiano, if you want to have a Conte, a specific cheese, here it is. It's on the offer. And so, frankly, yes, you build up your markets, and then you have to digest a 25% tariffs. That's not easy. That's not easy. And that's, frankly, not the way we as Europeans would think geopolitics with friends.
But, I mean, in that situation, so if it doesn't have a huge impact on, say, your processors, because there's not a significant amount going to the U.S., does it still worry producers?
Wait a moment. Oh. It is not significant if you look what is imported compared to the overall United States cheese market.
Yeah.
You see the percentage? Yeah. Then it's not important. But if, and I have the figures somewhere, but I don't look them up. I need to have them on my mind. If 45,000 tons of butter that come in for every year from the European Union to the United States, if you have to find another place for that 45,000 tons of butter, Canada may not be the ideal place to put those 45.
No offense, Alexander. Keep on trucking it.
So that was my next question.
And it's 150,000 tons of cheese. 150,000 tons of cheese. And you in Canada, you enjoy, I think, 26,000 tons of European cheese. And frankly, that is the minimum that you need.
So what are those emerging markets then that could help your European producers in the current context if this is the situation with the United States?
I mean, we always did find our way through. The problem is only it stresses markets, right? It stresses markets. We've lived that. Andrew Sauer, you're too young. We had the Russian embargo in 2014. All of a sudden, 30% of our cheese exports were cut off. And you had to find other places to put these products. And that gives stress on the market. And as soon as there's stress on the market, the retailers and the B2B customers tell you, listen, Alexander, you're sitting on your cheese, you can't export it any longer. Let's talk price.
Yeah.
That's what's happened when stress is on the market. And that could be anticipated, but it will not be not be easy with 150,000 tons of cheese to find. I mean, the United States of America are not our first cheese export destination. It's the United Kingdom, and then it's number two. voila.
So you mentioned that milk is back, which is a really positive outlook for European dairy. In terms of what other things really kind of have European producers, both farmers and processors, excited about the future?
It's the quality of the product. If you see the proud and I'm unhappy because I went to Canada now, and so I did miss a farm visit last week in the Netherlands, but I really didn't want to visit a farm in the Netherlands in times where, right? And come then to Canada, and I didn't want that. But we visited a relatively small Gouda production site, an industrial processing site, doing really great Gouda cheese in the Netherlands. And then it's a cooperative, and they wanted to show us then one of the farms that go with that. 80 cows need. I've seen the pictures later on. Okay, and this is the pride the farmer takes in making the milk and knowing what's happening with the milk. Since raw milk doesn't like to travel along a lot, you know what's happening with your milk. Is it infant formula? Is it a cheese? Is it fresh product? And that is the direct link that our farmers and have with our industry, next to the other link, which is unique in the dairy industry, that. Your dairy company, is it a private one or a cooperative one? Basically, every 24 hours, you're in contact with them. They come to your farm, pick up the milk. While if you're in the cereals and fruits or whatever, or in beef, you click on the internet and someone picks up what you have produced. You never know where it ends up in as a general rule. But in dairy, you know that. You are linked to one dairy company, and you know what's happening with the product that you take out of your cows. It's fantastic. And then the quality is recognized. That's bouncing back to our quality cheeses, our geographical indications from France, from the Netherlands, from Italy. You all know the iconic cheese names of which we are really proud. That's why we want them to be protected. That is a whole region that is all of a sudden proud of what the farmers and what the processors do. That's fantastic. So if you need more to be happy, if you need more to have a positive approach to the future, you need to see a doctor.
Yes. Well, man, do dairy farmers ever take pride in, even here in Canada, that connection all the way to the shelf. Like, I've worked in other industries, you can let go of the things. Milk, no. You're going to love that stuff until somebody else eats it. Like, it is just the way it is.
And they started now even selling, putting spruces and selling the cheese on the farms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the customers seem to believe that the cheese is made on the farm. But no, the milk is made on the farm, is shipped to the processing side, and then shipped back to the farm and sold as cheese from milk from the farm. But people like that. I can't, frankly, I don't have access to that thinking. But it works. So what?
So we've talked about all kinds of positive things, which is great because I have to admit it's kind of some tougher waters today at the conference. Things were not the most positive, potentially. But I would like to touch on the challenges before we let you off the hook here. So what are the biggest challenges facing producers in Europe right now?
The milk producers?
Yes.
In Europe, it is the generational renewal. I know personally farmers, dairy farmers that have a neat farm, really, I guess I haven't been to your farm, Sarah, but really a neat farm. If I would be a cow, I would love to work there, to be there, to live there. And well-treated cows and everything is neat. And none of his sons wants to take over. They all, and he's, what is he, Carsten, 54, 55-ish. The sons work on his farm, but they don't want to take over. Why? They say, wait a moment, for the nitrate regulations, we need to build new bassin for the sludges, mm-hmm. if this is correct English, yeah. manure. And this investment, Daddy, you do that first, and then we'll see in 5 years' time. You see what I mean? This is, that's the, and even the our policymakers admit that the milk price becomes higher, or you need a higher milk price because of the investments you have to do at farm level for environmental reasons. And that is something that is a burden. And then I don't need to tell you, Andrew, to tell you, Sarah, there's a reason why I do sheep on my farm. I got my weekend off.
You're self-spreaders.
I got my weekend off. And I don't need to be every day twice in my, even with a robot, you need to be there twice. Even with your robots, you need to be there.
Yeah. Because when you talk about, and that's just as we kind of do wrap up, Alexander, you talk about that challenge of succession and renewal, part of it being the threat of the regulatory burden being a real challenge. Talk a little bit about it. You know, we always kind of in Canada, I think, you know, for right or wrong, we do, there's a lot of people that do look to Europe to say, these are the policies that Europe is adopting when it comes to environment. Isn't this... Well, and I've had the great pleasure of being on dairy farms in Europe too, and I've heard that story many times where not ideal would be the word that most of those farmers would do. I mean, how do you balance that need for what consumers believe needs to be done and what producers need to actually be able to be sustainable when sustainability requires environmental but also economic sustainability?
First of all, Andrew, you know, you have not been on a French dairy farm if they were so politically correct.
Those Ireland and Poland, they were much, voila, much okay. more politically correct.
Voila. Bon. And then not that I did forget your question, but almost.
when it comes to that environmental, how do you balance? Obviously, well, European consumers want environment.
Yeah.
And farmers do. They want to protect the environment, no question. But they need economic viability.
Listen, it's your land. It is you keep the farm for your kids, and you know best what to do for the soil, for the water, etc. I mean, that is the first requirement that you have. Trust the farmer, right? It's a family business for I don't know how many generations. Sarah, you, Andrew,
I'd have to go back. The genealogy books took me to Scotland.
It might be not the same soil. It might not be the same soil. Okay. So, first of all, is the trust in farmers. And what we've seen last year in Europe, and that was really, I don't know, no politics, but that was refreshing to see in the Netherlands, for instance, a political party popping up saying we are the bond between the farmer and the citizen. And having that recognition by the broad and they were voted for not in the big cities, but they were voted in towns. People in the towns voted for that political party that clearly made a program saying we are pro farmers. We want you to trust the farmer. And that movement needs to go on. And then you don't need to fill in all the paperwork. On the other hand, in Europe we have the common agricultural policy, so you have certain subsidies which are linked to the ecological measures you take. It's taxpayers' money, so you need to have some sort of control over that. That is understandable. But that needs to be balanced out. And what the worst is, as I told you from the farmer I know quite well, that is that uncertainty, that you don't know what is it. Because if you invest in your farm, it's an investment for 20 years. So you would have, you need a visibility for 20 years on your sector. And that is something that people are still missing in Europe. But that's a real problem.
It's going to take you 20 years to pay for that sludge pit that you need. Well, it's been a lot of fun, Alexander. We've enjoyed having you on, and I'd really like to thank you for taking the time to come and talk to us on the Canadian podcast.
Sarah, Andrew, it was a pleasure. Vive le lait, vive le Canada.
And that's a wrap for this episode. A big thanks to our sponsor, Dairy Farmers of Canada, who are giving us some space here at the magnificent Chateau Laurier, site of the 2025 Annual Policy Conference.
And of course, we can't forget to give a shout out to our dynamic duo behind the scenes, Bruce Sargent and Carl Bellanger. You two are the magic that makes this podcast tick. Thanks a ton, guys.
It helps when they write the scripts.
Yeah.
If you're craving more, all our old episodes are just a click away on our streaming platforms, and of course, on our website, canadianpodcow.ca.
Further to that, if you have thoughts or burning questions, hit us up on Facebook, X, or potentially Blue Sky. We're always hanging out there.
We're, as of very recently, hanging out there. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next time for another fresh episode of the Canadian Podcast.